Find us online and streaming at Kane1240.com.
Kane Radio, AM 1240.
Very good afternoon, Acadiana. Welcome to Kane Radio's Chip Shots. I'm Teddy Sliman with you here, along with Ralph Boxcar Bergeron. We're an hour-long golf talk show. If you want to join in us, talk a little golf, 367-1240 is our number. And I just lost the button here, Boxcar.
Oh, well.
I think I got it fixed.
All right.
How are you?
Doing well.
Whoa, you're a little hot there, buddy.
I'm hot and running hot under the collar. Just fired up for the LSU game. I'm trying to tone down my voice a little bit and
getting a little and the game face on. I just texted all my kids,
man.
And they're all getting ready to watch it.
Hopefully, Cody has dressed my little grandson Eli in his little LSU outfit again, because that was a good luck charm the other day. So, I mean, you know, you can't break tradition, you know.
They were saying today, talking about golf, that, you know, the fans can't determine good luck. Only the golfers or the players can. So how does that work? With Elijah James producing a good luck.
When you have a lucky outfit, I mean, I can't tell you how many times during Saints games I've changed jerseys at halftime because one wasn't working and then one works, you know. So then the next game you go with that jersey because it carries over.
But that's exactly what they were talking about on the radio. I can't figure out which program I was listening to.
Probably the one you called me with three times.
Yeah,
your pocket dial.
But they were saying that they came to the conclusion that it's only the players who do stupid things, not stupid, but, you know, things like that have an influence.
Yeah, but look how many golf. I mean,
real influence, like it really matters.
And I would say the two sports, and we're talking, you know, oddly enough, that have the most superstitions are golfers and baseball.
Sure. Really?
You know? Baseball, Oh yeah, they have a lot of.
I know golfers do.
If a guy goes into a hitting streak, I mean, and he's. I don't know. Whatever. There's a lot of things we can't say on the radio.
There's
slump busters, right? You know, but golfers. I mean, a lot of them. They only carry two dimes in their pocket or three quarters or whatever.
Only use a certain number of balls, like threes
right.
or fours. They'll never use a six, seven, or eight. You know,
right? Yeah.
Oh man.
And other ones
incredible.
Use only high numbers. So it's just strange how.
I don't know too many people that choose big numbers. They want little numbers.
But they all have their own traditions, you know. So,
oh, yeah.
I can't think of any. I mean, like football players, they don't really, you know.
No, I mean, unless they chew grass like Les Miles
or
something.
Yeah, but that's just.
But he's a coach. I get it.
What's he doing right now?
A retired coach. Wealthy retired coach, but nonetheless.
Yeah.
Still paying him, LSU. Anyway, we diverse, don't we?
But anyway, the game does start at 6 o'clock tonight, so we do know that, you know, if we're lucky enough to have your presence right now, you're probably looking forward to the LSU game, and we would like you to call in early in the show if you have any opinions on.
Yeah, because if you call in late, we won't be here.
No, we're going to be out of here. We're going to take our last break where we don't have to talk, you know.
Zoom on down the highway. All right, well, let's thank our sponsors before we move along too far. Certainly want to thank Coca-Cola, and thanks for coming in and doing the little print promo for us, Boxcar, which includes Coca-Cola. It also includes golfballs.com, our two favorite sponsors. And then, of course, the McElhinney Company is kind of a silent partner. Cecily Mill and Angie Charbot supplying us with golf shirts.
I got to tell you this story. Yesterday I show up at the golf course and, you know, thinking you were going to be there. And, of course, they told me you'd gone and couldn't hit balls.
I came and I left.
Right. But guess who are dressed exactly identical in the same Tabasco golf shirt?
Well, I saw Kevin.
Well, me. I wore the green striped Tabasco shirt.
Y'all were a little team.
Well, so, I mean, once that happened, we had to become a team, you know. So it was Team Green against Team Mean.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, other sponsors, of course, are our golf club, Squirrel Run, Spanish Trail, and Sugar Oaks. And, you know, the golf business is plugging along as we talk here and move along through the summer. But the weather, of course, plays a big, big part on most of the golf courses, as does at Spanish Trail. I noticed a lot of the golf courses have not done their aerifying as of yet, which is pretty late into the season. Spanish Trail is one of them. I know Squirrel Run got lucky and got theirs done, and their greens are really responding to the top dressing and aerification. But
they were beautiful yesterday. They were a little slow just because of the rain and the growth or whatever, but they're filled in really, really nice.
Yeah, and Spanish Trail plans on doing that fairly soon, as does Sugar Oaks, to aerify, top dress, and fertilize to get that grass to grow for the summer months. And also at Spanish Trail, I got to say this again. We said it last week, but I think it's pretty amazing. I'm always amazed by like what we saw this weekend on the PGA Tour, something outstanding, one golf shot. Well, this guy had two, Dan Coryell at Spanish Trail. He had two eagles. Number three and number 10 in the same round. And that's pretty unusual for anyone to do that. And then also going on at Spanish Trail is their 23rd annual member tournament. Tee times at 8 o'clock both days on that weekend, July 8th and 9th. Pretty popular tournament, as you can see, 23 years it's been going on, been successful, and still counting. So good luck to all the members at Spanish Trail. They really participate in their club's local tournaments or private tournaments. So that ought to be fun to see who comes out ahead on that. And then Spanish Trail had the last Community First Bank Pro-Am a couple of weeks ago. First place went to Paul Waters, Glenn Bienvenu, Jody Menard, and Peter Jabia, winning $100 each. And the next one is going to be played next Thursday, not this coming Thursday, but next at Bayou Bend in Crowley, a nice little road trip for us that go to the Pro-Ams. And it's easy to join the Pro-Ams. Just give them a call, tee it up, bring you $30. What a bargain to play a different golf course each month. And like I said, Bayou Bend's the one coming up this month. Then moving on down to Sugar Oaks, or at least from the Gator Golf Club, which stems out of Sugar Oaks. Thanks to Boyd Booty for bringing me these results. They played at Cassati Pines in Kinder this past weekend, and Boyd was raving about how nice the golf course is. And that's a testament, Boxcore, I was telling him, to the fact that, Cassati Pines is a successful casino with a golf course, adjoined to it. Mm-hmm. And when you have that kind of money to spend on maintenance, it makes a world of difference. And that's what, the regular members or people who play golf around here don't really get. They don't understand how much money it costs. And we talked about it last week.
Yeah.
In depth last week. But
it's a totally different story when the golf course is secondary to your revenue. Obviously the main source is coming from the casino,
Right.
So they don't have to make money off the golf course. In fact, if the golf course doesn't make money for them, it can be a write-off, So,
right. True.
I mean, there's no downfall to having a casino golf course. In all fairness to them, I've never heard since they opened up anything but rave reviews from that golf course, whereas,
right.
Tamaka Trails in Marksville, I think it's struggled, somewhat over the years, as far as conditioning.
Why is that, though? I mean, they're right there associated with the casino.
I know. I just think
you
the
think
design.
You think that casino is not making
No, the design, I think, was just mm-hmm. poor in Tamaka Trails, and those bunkers have just doomed them in. I mean,
yeah.
They were just, an impossible uh-huh. task to begin with. They thought it would be a the drawing point to have the most bunkers on whatever, Louisiana. I'm not sure how many they have exactly, but it was a ungodly number. But
yeah.
As we talked about, last week, the cost of sand has gone up exponentially, mm-hmm. and their bunkers were just so deep, and you couldn't maintain the integrity of them. You could just see the netting all around the edges and stuff. It was just, unsightly. So I just think it was course design. I think more and more in the future, when we see people, designing golf courses, the architects are going to have to keep in mind what the maintenance costs are going to be and kind of, design around that, in some cases. I mean, obviously, if you have unlimited budgets,
right.
Erin Hills, Chambers Bay.
Yeah, but that's a different animal.
Yeah.
South Louisiana, you get 60-something inches
right.
of rain each year. You can't build big bunkers and expect them to not be maintained.
Just, shallow bunkers, good drainage, and you don't need a bunch of them. You just have to, you know, you got to make, you know, strategic other, you know, other ways with water is obviously, you know, one of the things you want, you know, because you want lakes for the water to drain into, you know.
So plus to catch those golf balls so you resell them, you know.
Well, okay.
That's always what I thought of.
Really?
Why not put a water hazard right in front of the green, you know? What's wrong with that?
Why does that not surprise me?
You gotta have a...
No, we were talking about that yesterday, though. We you know, had an honest discussion with Kevin. We think, you know, Squirrel ought to have at least one short par three. I mean, all the par threes yesterday were at least 165 and up, you know.
Tell me some new news.
And that's from the whites, you know, that we were playing. I mean, poor Kevin Arsenault was playing the goals and every one.
But he chooses to do that.
Well, I know. No,
y'all
didn't twist
his arm, right?
I don't mean poor by poor. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
I understand.
I mean, that's his choice.
That's his choice.
But every one of those is going to be 190 to 210, you know.
That,
I mean,
to me, that doesn't make for a good golf course. That's why... Every time we play, we should allow or do something different.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no set rule that you gotta tee off from the whites or the blues or any color. In fact, since we're off on this tangent, week before you didn't play, I was talking with whoever, I can't remember who it was, but I said we ought to play a tournament where there's no pins. You just shoot at the green and see how you play. You know, you got to get outside the box of being from the white tees to the 152 yards to the pin. I mean, why not try something different?
You know,
and my contention is, I don't mean to keep going, but why not tee off from the reds on a par three?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the thing that we're talking about. All the holes there, possible exception of one of them, would lend themselves to changing up. So 1 month. You know, you could have, like, number three play as the short hole. You know, the next month, number 17, whatever. Not, you know, you could kind of switch it around to where it wouldn't be the same old routine, you know, because you don't have that built-in architecture for one, you know,
but
really.
I'm going to tell you why that they won't do that, or at least the reason I was given they won't do that is when Al Justice was the first superintendent there, the guy Perry brought in, from Indian Bayou in Destin, and it made sense, but I still don't like it. But it's a fact that the course is rated from a certain yardage, and that determines the slope so that you compare Squirrel Run or any golf course to themselves.
And
so
who,
all the other golf
how many
courses.
People are doing that?
Well, a lot of people that host, you know, Louisiana PGA tournaments.
Well, they don't. I mean, they're
not. And handicaps. So.
But, you know.
Yeah,
no.
We don't have to abide by that. There's no thing. But for them to set up the golf course, in other words, if you have a 440-yard par 4 and it's measured from the middle tees and you move the tees 10 yards forward, well, then you have to move the pin back to make the hole still play 440 yards.
And that's
just for rating. I get that. And it's valuable because, you know, I mean, if you're going to have a statewide tournament, like when Squirrel Run had, they wouldn't have had the qualifying for the Chittimachi tournament if their course was not rated. So
no, but I mean, that's not happening anymore, right?
We don't have to, you know, that's not a rule for us.
Right now, 99.9% of your tournaments are either your member tournaments or maybe some scrambles where it doesn't matter what the slope is, okay? The only thing you might be able to host now is a high school state golf championship. And you don't have to abide by it.
They just have to establish the handicap from that point. But who cares where we play from?
That's what I'm saying, you know. And you know, we like Sid and I said, you should have – I think every golf course should have one par three that's about 130 or less yards, but surrounded by a myriad of trouble, whether it be an island green or a bunch of bunkers or, you know, whatever the fact might be. And one drivable par four, you know, for a good length player, but let's say 300 or less, but with all kind of challenges around, you know. And I think that just adds so much more intrigue rather than hidden driver hybrid to a par four. Driver, you know, I mean, it's just, it gets
well, if you look at the really good golf courses, and I'm going to just bring two of them into play here, and they were both designed by Alistair McKenzie. We're back in the day, Augusta National and Pebble Beach. They have a variety of par threes. They have long ones and they have short ones. Number six at Pebble Beach, or rather number seven, is 100 yards long.
That's the postage stamp hole, right?
Yeah, the one down there. Yeah. You know, it's a little simple wedge shot if the wind's not blowing.
Right.
And then look at Augusta National, number 12. You know, Amen
right.
Corner is 140-yard par 3, but it's the most challenging par 3 in
right.
the world.
And even 17 at TPC is, what, 130-something yards.
Exactly. So you're getting a variety from a really good yeah. design golf course. You play on a par 3s, you're going to play all four different clubs, if that's four of them.
And that's what I think would you know, lend interest. I mean, I know we don't have a lot to talk about tonight anyway, but I think this is a good topic because I think, you know, the courses, even though the architect may have built it a certain way, you still have you can do variety with your tee box, you know, placements and your pin placements, and you can still make that whole play just like 17 at Sugar Oaks. You know, we don't play it anymore from the back, you know, where it's 190 yards. I mean, we play in it from that middle,
right.
you know, from the tee box, 150, okay?
But you see, I wouldn't mind playing it for 190 if we were playing number 12 from about 110 and number 3 from 140.
But that's not the case.
And number 9 from 160.
Okay.
You know, I wouldn't mind those four different lengths.
Right.
We don't. We play them all.
Yeah, they're all about 160 to, you know, in that range.
Exactly.
You know? And that's why I think, you know, in – I mean, 17 used to be a hell of a hole when you had that water, and I mean, it still is.
Both sides,
you know, it still
yeah,
is a tough
still
hole
is.
From back there, especially. But I just think you know, and I mean, I know God, believe me, you know, I'm not trying to say Appaloosa is a great course, but I love the fact they have that little par 3 that's 100 mm-hmm. yards because it's a hard little hole. You know, the
it's
water, the green slopes all the way back to the water. So you can, if you hit just a little short, you might hit the green, spin all the way back in the water. You go over the green, you got a really tough chip shot coming back because it's going toward the water, you know. So it's just a good little hole at 100 yards, and I don't see why you don't have that variety,
right.
you know.
And the point you made about the par fours, I think the USGA is trying to do that in every tournament they have, is have a drivable par four, you know, where you can you have a risk reward that
right.
you know, if you do it, you do it good. And look what happened
when
he shot 63, Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
That 15th hole, he hit that par with
yeah.
a 3-wood. Of course, you know, they play a different game.
And what you mentioned is especially true in our area, Ted, and I don't know, maybe it's just a cycle we're going through right now. But it seems to me like the last 5, 6, 7, 8, I don't know how many years now. It always seems to me like these golf courses are just playing long because it's wet. You know, it's
yeah.
always – you never get these – you know, you remember the days back when you owned, you know, Sugar Oaks and you had cracks sometimes.
You'd lose a ball.
Yes, in the crack in the fairway. We never got rain, you know. Now we get
Don
rain.
Don was the same when he owned it. You know, I can remember hitting really long drives because
yeah,
it was so hard.
It was so hard.
That blackjack
you know?
Gets hard.
Yeah, but that's not the case anymore. So, I mean, you just have to – I don't know. Like you said, think out the box. Be creative. You know, I know it takes I think the biggest challenge is to get your maintenance crew to want to move the tee markers.
But the thing, we don't have to play from the tee markers. You know, there's a golf course, and I can't remember the name
right.
of it. They don't have tee markers.
Yeah.
The groups play from wherever they want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of like that. It might be Lock and Var in Houston.
I do like the times that we play when – we play those matches where the winners get to pick the next
like
tee box. That is fun, yeah.
Sure, because, I mean, you know, it makes it interesting.
Yep.
All right, getting back to our local golf, but that was a good discussion. We were talking about Cassati Pines. That's how we got off on a tangent. That's where the Gator Golf Club played in Kinder this past weekend, and the first flight winner was Jeremy Boudreau with +4. Second flight winner, Elvis Babineau Jr., +8. And Kent Kern was the third flight winner with +9. And Bro Provo was a fourth flight winner with a whopping +13. Now, they have a big lineup coming. You know, they got rained out a couple of times in May and June. So July is going to be busy for the Gator Golf Club. They play Oak Wing next week. Then they take a week off and make up date with Atchafalaya and then the Bluffs to round out the month of July.
That's some good golf courses.
Yeah. And you know, the more and more I look at it, this group here is pretty solid. You know, they have fun. They playing for money. It doesn't cost a whole lot, and they travel. And I like all of that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, they got lucky to get it in there, though, because, I mean, obviously, like Charles, you know, is right in Cindy's eye there.
Right.
So to get Cassati Pines in was definitely a blessing. But yeah, I heard them, you know, most of them go off the – the night before,
exactly.
You know.
And that's spent, exactly what Boyd said.
Right. And so, I mean, gosh, you know the golf courses and casinos are loving it because they're pumping money into
So they give them a discount, like you were saying, for the golf so that they'll come spend money eating and gambling. And,
right.
And it's a win-win for everybody, really.
Absolutely.
All right, continuing with Sugar Oaks, their most recent shootout, the winners were Boyd Booty and Preston Barham, plus six, winning $22 each. And they have one set tentatively next for July 15th and 16th, two-day event for the shootouts, kind of like what we do with the Pro-Am. And then their Twilight Scramble was held on June 14th. First place went to Jim Frith and Stafford Deku, and they won $25 each. Fun things going on at Sugar Oaks. Then at Squirrel Run, Kevin was telling me, go online because, you know, the 4th of July is coming up on a holiday. And, you know, obviously get your tee time, book your tee time to make sure you get to play. But you can go online, golfnow.com, and book a tee time, and you get a reduced rate. So check that out. And like you were talking about, I have a little note here that their greens are really good after that aerification. They have bounced back super well.
No, they were in tip top shape. And like I said, the only thing is they weren't quite as fast as I'd been used to over there. But you couldn't ask for them rolling any truer in conditions where despite it was cart path only, obviously. Mm-hmm. As Kevin alluded to, probably could have had the carts off the path on a few holes, but we. You know, sure enough, we number two, right, we drive up to the green. There's some cart marks right by the bunker. Somebody had driven their cart all the way up, you know, by the green. And, you know, he pretty much knew who it was because it was one of the people who had that handicap flag and think they can go off the path whenever they want to. And that's, you know, that's the challenge. And as golfers, we need to be cognizant of that. If they say cart path only, just do it. I mean, it's not just for their – obviously, they don't want to do a cart path only because it cuts down on play. They're doing it for a reason. That's to save your golf course, you know,
sure.
To not have ruts and to let the fairways, you know, dry up and be nice, you know.
My wife was by my side as I worked throughout the years at Sugar Oaks.
Yeah.
And whenever we had to put them on a cart path, I hated that, but I had to, you know.
Yeah.
And the people wouldn't play, and, boy, it would irk me. Now she says, isn't that funny how the tides have changed? Now you don't play when it's on the cart path. But that's not by choice, really.
No, and you know, at Sugar Oaks Saturday, I think they were, because we walked the back nine, because, I mean, they rode the back nine, because it was so humid. It was unbelievable. Yeah. We finished that front and we were just soaking wet. But I think there were like six holes on the path and 12 off the path, you know. So it was doable, you know. But I mean, again, you know, you have to, and again, you know, Gil came up with that great idea of having the par three course, which is right by the path. So if you really don't want to walk all across the fairway, and believe me, yesterday, unfortunately, I realized there's not too many cart paths at Squirrel Run that are to your left. You know, most of them are to the right. And so as a hooker of the golf ball, I did a lot of walking yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, and I finally got to the point where I didn't even care about the distance anymore. I just brought, you know, what I thought would be the club and just kind of hit it, you know, because, I mean, it gets to be too tedious to carry three or four clubs and your range finder.
Well,
and
once
all
again,
that,
that's where they need to put those markers out in the middle of the fairway. So you just get a general idea.
Yeah.
And you can bring, like you said, maybe a couple of clubs and then, you know,
I agree.
Judge from there. All right, back to local stuff. Well, on the state scene, the LGA, Louisiana Golf Association's final event, well, next event, is the Junior Golf Tournament at Chafuncta Country Club in Covington, July 12th and 14th. Then the Gulf States PGA rescheduled their Louisiana Big Eye Junior Insurance Classic Championship, and that's going to be played Monday, July 10th at the Island in Plaquemine, two rounds in one day. So registration's reopened for that. And then, Boxcar, you're going to recognize this name when I announce it. Emma Talley won the Island Resort Championship in the Smyrna Tournament.
Symetra.
Yeah.
That's the developmental tour for the LPGA.
Yeah. Right. Final round was washed out, but the 23-year-old former University of Alabama star shot a 369 Sunday morning, completed a round, and 135 nine under par total. She's also the winner, and I didn't really realize this, the 2013 U.S. Amateur, Women's Amateur, mm-hmm. and the 2015 NCAA individual title. So the right. girl's got credentials.
And we talk about the you know, Americans that could carry the banner on the LPGA Tour, and she certainly could be one that does that. And for those of you who, you know, don't know the inside story, when Teddy and I and Paul Terrio went to the Masters, was it 2009, Teddy?
Oh man, I can't.
I mean,
remember.
She was committed to Alabama, but she hadn't started.
She was still
yet.
In high school,
so
I think.
She was still a senior. Yeah, so I think it was when Oosthuizen. I mean, not Oosthuizen.
I can't remember who won the Masters.
Oh, the little foreigner with the perfect swing that never wins anything anymore. Gosh. I'll think of it in a second. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, we played at one of the golf courses in Alabama, and we saw these couple of female golfers behind us, and they just had looked like caddies and, you know, some parents walking and all that. So really didn't know what was going on, but it turned out I ended up talking to the dad who was
did he hurt himself
crutches.
Or something?
Yeah, he had sprained his ankle. And that was his daughter, Emma Talley, and we were talking about how she had committed to Alabama, and she was one of the top, I think they were from Tennessee, one of the top recruits in the nation, and they had come down, I think, on a recruiting trip, in fact, or a visit, whatever, and she was, you know, playing some golf with another girl from Alabama, but you could tell with those swings right away. Yeah, this wasn't any, you know,
they
any
had a nice little
behind.
Entourage.
Yeah,
too.
A really good little entourage.
You could tell that they were something special.
And so she kind of followed her career a little bit, and then I do remember her winning the NCAAs and the amateur. So definitely, when you do those two things, you got credentials. Yeah.
Yes,
so
sir.
So to get your first Metro Tour win, and she's obviously now in position because you don't make a lot of money on that tour. I think for the year she's like 47,000.
She earned 22.5
for a win
to jump from 14th to 4th on the
right.
money list with 43,000.
Yeah. So,
but she won 22 right there.
So she's pretty much assured of being in the top 10 at the end of the year, which earns you a promotion to the LPGA Tour because you just don't like, you know, that's it's ridiculous that tour. I really don't. I mean, you got to have deep pockets to you know, good sponsors to be playing there because you don't make. You know, the web.com, you know, the equivalent, at least you can make a living on that tour. Not, you know, but not this one.
I picked up the paper last week, and I was taken aback because the headline said, Junior, I'm going to show it to you too, Baton Rouge Junior Golf Tournament winners. And it says, Zachary's Drew Silman in the 8 to 11-year-old boys won. And, he's exactly Drew's age, and his name is spelled just exactly one. Like it. It's just the I and the L.
I know.
Theodore looked it up, and he said, yeah, the guy is for real, you know. I mean, it's not a misprint, not anything. He said, I'm going to have to recruit him. Maybe he and Drew can play. Because he's Drew's age, at least from 8 to 11. He's in Drew's range.
Yeah.
And then finally on the local scene, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Classic was held at in Natchitoches, and Theodore and Mary got to attend. UL's presence was there by them. Because Dan McDonald, longtime sports information director and just an all-around nice guy and media guy, was selected to the Hall of Fame along with David Toms, LSU's All-American and PGA Tour star. And Theodore and Mary, like I said, got to attend that, and that was a lot of fun. And he told me that he's going to recruit at the Bluffs tomorrow for a junior golf tournament, but his recruiting has really been put on the back burner, and it's kind of hurting him because they're getting ready to open up this new facility for his golf team, and it got postponed to July 13th, which is a couple of Thursdays from now. So he's anxious to get back on the recruiting trail because he's had such a poor year, you know, according to college golf standards, and he wants to show off that facility and hopefully build up his program. So.
It was 2011, Ted. Charles Schwartzel is who won.
Charles Schwartzel, yeah. All right, yeah. We'll take our first break, then we'll be back in a bit.
For over 30 years, Squirrel Run Golf Club has been New Iberia's premier golf community. Opened in 1986, Squirrel Run has become known as a location for golf where the whole family can enjoy. Each year, new golfers are tested by a challenging 18 holes of golf. Golf tournaments and outings at Squirrel Run are great ways to get together on the golf course. Memberships are available for those interested in joining Squirrel Run. Reserve your next tee time with Squirrel Run by contacting the Pro Shop at 337-367-0863. Squirrel Run, Darby Lane, New Iberia.
The golf season has arrived, and if you're looking to shave strokes off your game, you've got to visit the GolfBalls.com retail center. New 2017 inventory is arriving daily. Check out the newest clubs from Ping, TaylorMade, and Callaway, the latest balls from Titleist, Bridgestone, and Srixon, or the hottest apparel from Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. Located in the Boulevard Shopping Center on Arnold Boulevard, next to Harbor Freight Tools. GolfBalls.com. We're in your bay.
Hello, Acadiana. This is your old buddy Boudreaux letting you know that we are now open at 1752 Center Street in New Iberia, Louisiana, selling the freshest seafood around. Shrimp, lobster, crab, and crawfish. So come today by Boudreaux's Cajun Crab Shack. We are located at 1752 Center Street in New Iberia next to Progressive Martial Arts with plenty of room to park. Man, you're going to bust a gut at Boudreaux's Cajun Crab Shack.
Sugar Oaks Golf Course, located at 4002 Sugar Oaks Road, is an 18-hole regulation golf course. This medium yardage layout has adequate length, wide fairways, and not too difficult approach shots. Sugar Oaks Golf Course is a semi-private course that's open to the public. Our guest rates are very attractive, and our monthly dues are accommodating. Give us a call for your tee time. That's Sugar Oaks Golf Course in New Iberia. Phone 337-364-7611. 364-7611.
We have a new player on the field, and he's ready for kickoff with a delicious ice-cold Coca-Cola and the kick. Ice giving him a little trouble as a few cubes shake loose. He's probably going to pour it here, and he does. The glass is full. Can he go all the way? He did it! Oh, wow! And just listen to that fizz! That might have been the most refreshing thing that I've ever seen. Whew. Coca-Cola. Taste the feeling.
The golf season has arrived, and if you're looking to shave strokes off your game, you've got to visit the GolfBalls.com retail center. New 2017 inventory is arriving daily. Check out the newest clubs from Ping, TaylorMade, and Callaway, the latest balls from Titleist, Bridgestone, and Srixon, or the hottest apparel from Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. Located in the Boulevard Shopping Center on Arnold Boulevard, next to Harbor Freight Tools. GolfBalls.com. We're in your bay.
All the sweetness without the bagasse. Kane Radio, AM 1240.
Welcome back to Chip Shots. I'm Teddy Sliman in the air chair along with my friend and colleague Ralph Boxcar Bergeron. 367-1240 is our number if you want to jump on board with us and talk a little golf as we turn our attention now to the national scene. And wow, Boxcar, I wonder who'd you have in your fantasy league?
I had Jordan Spieth, Daniel Berger, and Charlie Hoffman.
Darn. One, two, three for old Box.
1-2 tie for three, you know. So, I mean, but, yeah, pretty amazing. I really was happy to see Jordan win again because, you know, I'm not to say, you know, I mean, Berger's also from that same class, and he's actually, you know, been playing really well lately. But
he won 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah, he did. But I think Jordan – you know, gosh, I mean, we say, oh, man, he's in a slump, you know, because he hasn't won a major this year. This is his second victory now this year. And he's now become the only PGA Tour player in the era since World War II with 10 victories before the age of 24, okay? So, once again, he's only 23 years old, and he's won 10 times now, of course, you know. The benchmark is still...
Once again, the benchmark.
Is still our boy in rehab, you know. Tiger won 15 times before he turned 24, but yeah, he holed out, and I didn't get to watch this. I went visiting with my mom, and when it went to a playoff, and I was just exhausted. I ended up sleeping last night. I fell asleep at 7 o'clock, and I woke up at 4 something this morning. He went to playoff with Berger, so I'm like, okay, well, I can't lose either way with my fantasy team. But deep down, I was pulling for Spieth because I just like him. And, you know, he had a couple of, you know, I don't know how his cat – we talk about caddies, you know. We'll talk about Bones and Jim Mackay later. But, Phil Mickelson. But, man, Daniel Geller's got to have some some patience, too, because Spieth gets so upset with himself on the golf course.
He's pretty emotional, isn't he?
Yeah, when he just hits, you know, one bad shot,
he talks to himself.
It's hard to keep him, you know, I would think, you know, in the present moment, you know, because, boy, does he get upset.
He attributed a lot to his success this week to his caddy that kept him focused and in the game.
And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't direct it at, you know, the fans or fellow competitors. It's internal. Yeah. You know, he's just
spontaneous.
Mad at himself, you know.
That's just who he is, though, you know.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch the replay on it, and I'm sure you did, you saw he just threw that club like it was just out of elation. And there's a certain angle there where it shows Michael Grella throwing the rake up in elation, you know. So, I mean, these are young boys. These are young kids.
Yeah.
You know, and this game's fun for them. And they're on a big stage. But, man, shoot, their personality comes out. It's a beautiful thing, as they say.
It goes to show you in golf how you have to just persevere, you know, because he had to get up and down from the bunker in 18 to you know, get there. And, I mean, he had a great shot. He actually was trying to make that shot because he was reading the green before he hit the bunker shot.
Right.
But he uncharacteristically putted really poorly. He missed a couple of very short putts, you know, for par coming in down the stretch. And it was definitely not a walk in the park. But it is hard, you know, to lead wire to wire in a PGA Tour event. How many times have we seen guys come back from 5 and 6 shots in the final round, you know? So the fact that he was able to close it out and ended up winning on the first playoff hole with a 60-foot birdie from a greenside bunker and beat Daniel Berger. And he went on to say this was one for the ages.
Yeah, and then how about his buddy Justin Thomas predicting it on Twitter? You know, he said, what amazes me, that class, like you were saying, of 2011, which includes Daniel Berger as well. He was from Georgia, but still, they all pull for each other so much. It's like a fraternity out there for those guys. And that's a good thing to see, because there's no animosity, there's no jealousy or anything like that among that class, and probably among a lot of the players. But this was a special win for Jordan Spieth in another way. As you well know, he had, and then everybody that follows Jordan Spieth knows, he has a sister who is handicapped, okay, mentally handicapped.
Right.
And this tournament here, fans got in wheelchairs got a treat when they attended the golf tournament, because they got a special vantage point on number 18 green for this week's tournament. It's the second year in a row that they do that near the 18th hole. It's designed for people with ALS or other, you know, deficiencies. So kind of a special, you know, ironic treat there for Jordan Spieth with his love for his sister who's, you know, mentally challenged, and for this tournament to go out of the box and do something like this to show a special, you know, tribute to people with handicaps. And I like that.
Yeah, and I tell you what, again, we talked about some of the luck that he had, but he had some shots coming in that could have definitely gone in the water, and he got really, really lucky. So, you know, he went on to say, you know, and he said, that's a lot of luck. You know, I took advantage of the good breaks and happy to come out on top. He's only the third winner to go wire to wire in the Connecticut event. Gene Littler did it in 1959, and I never heard of this guy, Tim Morris, in 1982.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, I never did, you know. Sure
Tim
wasn't
Morris.
Sure wasn't Tom Morris. Not 1982.
Come back from the grave.
But, yeah, I mean, by the time you were playing the tour, you think you'd have heard of a guy, but I never heard of him. But Spieth's only other wire-to-wire win was the 2015 Masters. It was also his first win in a tournament debut. So, oddly enough, this first time he played in this golf event, the last player to win in Cromwell, and his first start was Big Phil Blackmore back in 1985.
Yeah. Another little interesting story on Spieth on his first round 63. He was cruising under at 3 under par when he stepped onto the 6th tee with his partners, Wes Bryant and Brant Snedeker, and he was preparing to hit, and a lady fainted. Then obviously, he says, we were going to wait. Our officer was right on top of it. The guy was walking with us, was on top of it, and the paramedics got to her. He said, we obviously were hoping she was going to be okay. Then we waited so till it was appropriate and went on to the rest of the hole. But this is not the first time this happens to Spieth. He did it second time was a month ago when someone in the gallery had a medical issue, and unfortunately, during the pro-am round at the memorial, the man died. So he actually witnessed a man passing away. He said, "I don't know what the deal is. It's bizarre. It happens. There's more important things in golf." And then, you reported last week that the guy at Aaron Hills, a 94-year-old man, went through his excitement with his son and then passed away. Meet his wife up in heaven. So
yeah. Well, that was that just seemed destined.
Was destiny for sure. That article made me think, wow.
I know, huh? That's
Hey, now I want to ask you about this guy. And I can't even pronounce his first name. Xander Scheffler?
Oh, yeah. That dude with it. Yeah.
Sandy?
Doesn't have very many vowels in his name. Yeah.
No. He finished fifth in the U.S. Open, but he finished pretty good up here. I can't see him. My eyesight's getting bad, and his lights are terrible in here. He finished maybe about 15th, but do you know anything about him?
Nothing.
Yeah,
it sounds like he'd be from Sweden.
He's 23 years old. I got a few of the stats. He went to San Diego State, so yeah, he's probably Swedish.
I mean, just the name sounds like it to me, but
he's been knocking on the door. New name to look for.
Yeah, it's funny how sometimes you think the guys who are the don't miss up and comings like Ollie Schneiderjans, another hard name to pronounce, but he really hasn't really produced anything, on tour. And then you got these other guys who just seemingly come out of nowhere and start playing well,
Yeah, they got credentials, as we say. And then on the Champions Tour, we were talking off the air a while back, you and I, about Mike Small, the golf coach for Illinois. He finished, looked like, about 15th and won $23,000 with a 70-68, 71-209. Fred Couples ended up winning the tournament with 201. He edged out Scott Verplank. So, just amazes me, a golf coach that doesn't play in tournaments. Watches golf.
Right,
Can be that
but
good and
nice little supplement to your salary over there. If you can make $100,000 a year or so off the course in tournaments,
$23,000, Theodore would.
I know.
I can't say what nice Theodore would do.
No, I know. That'd be a nice little bump for him, though.
And then Rory, Rory played in the tournament as well. He shot a 3-under-67 in the opening round, and then it looked like he was going to get things going, but it appeared it just went off the radar. It totally went lost. So it is fitting that what went on with him this week, the Northern Irishman fired a 6-under par 64 in the final round using the third putter in 3 days. And he birdied 7 of his first 15 holes, hitting 17 greens in regulation. The only sloppy bogey came on the last hole. And even with the closing bogey, McIlroy rocketed up the leaderboard. When he reached the clubhouse, he jumped 49 spots to tie for 11th. And maybe that's good things to come, because overall it was a bit confusing for the 72 holes. He's tinkering with that putter, and
I know
it's never been his strong suit. But man, I wish he would learn.
But it wasn't that much of a weakness either. It was just kind of it was an average putter, but he wasn't. When you start doing that much experimenting, now you got in your head, a bad putter.
Exactly. So that can't bode well.
Yeah.
But hopefully this time he'll stick with this get on a good little run.
That's why a few weeks ago when it was reported that Jordan Spieth had switched putters, I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, why would, and of course, it also shocked me, but that was more of a contractual thing, I think, when Tiger Woods switched to the Nike putter, because he had won all those majors with his Scotty Cameron. But
right.
He tried to get Nike to make one to replicate his Scotty Cameron because he had to play their club,
mm-hmm.
So, but man, I mean, of all the clubs in the bag, that's the one that look at you. You would never switch from that zebra putter.
Yeah, but I'm a terrible putter. But, your point is valid, because Ben Crenshaw is probably one of the greatest putters in my era ever.
Right.
He keeps going back. When he was competitive, he kept going back, and he had bazillions of putters made to try to duplicate that 88-02 Wilson that he had. But we'd always go back to that one. It just felt right to him.
Yeah. But he started off the week with the TaylorMade Spider putter, which he used at the U.S. Open, And then after the Friday round, he switched to a TaylorMade TP Collection Mullen putter on Saturday. Then he swapped that out on Sunday for a TaylorMade TP Collection Juno Tour prototype. And he started the round ranked 102nd round one, 114th round two. This is in putting average.
Right.
69th in round three and 39th in round four. So it did get a little better.
Yeah, he had 30 putts, which is not great, you know, in the final round. But still in all, he must have been hitting it pretty darn close.
Right.
And then he's off this week, and then he starts that big stretch with the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, and then the Open at Royal Birkdale. So, three tournaments in a row
on
the Lynx golf courses.
There'll be quite a few guys, I think, going up and playing the you said it's the Irish, and or the which was right before the
– The Irish Open's first in 2 weeks, and then the Scottish Open.
Scottish, okay.
And then, England.
You'll see a lot of the PGA Tour pros play – Scottish Open and then the Open. You know, 3 weeks is a lot, you know, to go overseas and play.
Right.
But a lot of them do like to play.
Phil does, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm wondering who's going to be his caddy.
No, it's his brother, Tim.
Oh, Tim?
Yeah.
They announced it. Great.
Yeah, he's going to be his caddy for the rest of the year.
And he's going to manage John Rahm.
apparently, you know. It's
dual hats he's wearing, huh?
You know, how ironic would it be if Bones ended up caddying for John Rahm?
You know? Boy, that would be the irony of all irony.
And then they end up in a final pairing. You know, how cool would that? Well, that's, you know, it's just that's one of those movie, you know, Hollywood things.
Yeah, right, right. A script that only Boxcar would write.
And in case you wonder what we're talking about, I mean, you'd have to be kind of off the golf radar if you didn't hear about this. But a 25-year relationship, which really is like a marriage, came to an end when Phil Mickelson and his caddy, Jim Bones Mackay, split ways this past week. They were actually supposed to make, and they had agreed that the U.S. Open was going to be their last tournament together. But, of course, Phil didn't get to play in the U.S. Open because of his daughter Amanda's graduation.
That would have been cool because they said it would have been 25 years to the day.
Day. Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
And I still think, you know, the underlining notes are that they're okay. I mean, they're both comfortable with what they did and happy to go their separate ways.
But there's a lot of speculation.
25 years is a long time.
Exactly what happened. But he said, you know, Phil said, we could just tell it was time. We just needed a little bit of a change in an environment to do something different. And, look, it's no different than when Tiger and Steve Williams split up. But
I can't agree with that.
But. Well, I mean, but you wouldn't have ever thought they would. Okay, now I know when that's their circumstances were totally different.
Yeah.
But you kind of always thought. But we were talking about that Saturday when we played. I mean, you know, you always associated Jack Nicklaus with Angelo, you know, and Lee Trevino with Herman.
Yep.
I mean, the old-time caddy just
Nick Faldo with Fanny.
Yeah.
You know, when she left him, it was tragic.
Tom Watson with Bruce Edwards,
if he hadn't passed away,
I mean, you know, he would have been his caddy for life, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, those relationships for those elite players just didn't disappear, you know. Now, you know.
And it shows you how important they are. Look, modern day with Jordan Spieth and Mike Grella, they really are a team. And I know we hear that and he gets old, but Jordan Spieth gave him all the credit for keeping him focused this week because he didn't have his A game like Tiger Woods.
I mean, because Jordan Spieth, when you look at his game, he doesn't do any particular thing great. Except when he's putting really, really good, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
But he doesn't hit the driver particularly great. No. He doesn't hit his irons particularly great. You know, I mean, he's not a great ball striker. You know,
not at all.
He has the grind and the desire to win. But boy, it's especially important for a caddy to keep him focused and under control because I think, in all honesty, when I watch him, I think he's got a little ADD problem. You know, he just seems to be a little too excitable, you know.
He wears his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, it's obvious.
But even
that's
when,
who
you
he
know,
is.
Guys who we think of being like real emotional and fiery, you know, Sergio and Seve and some of those guys, I still didn't really remember them having reactions like he has. So just a three putt. I mean, he just had a, you know, heck, you three putted, okay, just move on. But I mean, he just went like he was just so mad at himself. He was unreal, you know. So to calm, you know, to put him back in the moment before he tees off in the next hole, it's got to be a you know, a difficult job. And yeah,
but so, but yet, you know, that those relationships as they build, just like all the ones you mentioned, it they learn to how to feed off each other and tell each other what to do. So
well, you have to learn. Yeah, you got to learn your boundaries. And I think when we see some of the relationships in, it's like when one of the either the caddy becomes a little too full of himself or the player. You know,
and that's probably what happened with Steve
Williams
and Tiger. You know, they had, both had huge egos and both thought they were the
main reason for the success. Yeah,
right. Whereas these two guys, Grilla and Speed, don't. You know, I mean, they're humble as can be.
And I really thought Bones and Phil were that way, too.
You know? I think they are. Now, I really think this is congenial.
I'm going to tell you what I honestly think, and I could be totally wrong on this. I think Phil's arthritis is getting worse. I think
he's going to cut back and
he's cutting way back on his schedule.
You know,
schedule.
Bones had two surgeries on
and
replaced
his knees,
two knees,
right.
So you know he wants to go some more.
Right.
And I think Phil's just letting him go.
Exactly.
He says it right here. He's a lot more than a great caddy on the course. He's somebody you want in his corner. Bones will be getting a number of top players coming after him because he's such a great caddy. So,
right.
I mean, right there, that tells you, me, you know.
I think so. I think he just said, you know, he's like, okay, maybe it's time for you to go with a younger guy.
Yeah.
That you can.
Letting him go.
Because I fully expect Phil's not going to be somebody that's going to play till he's 50 and then go to senior tour. I mean,
no.
He's got too many other outside interests and, you know, financial mm-hmm. things that he likes to do. He's not going to get bored by not playing golf.
No.
He's going, you know, he'd love to own a, you know, Major League Baseball team. There's all kind of things he wants to do.
Sure.
But I think you'll see Bones on a young player's bag, if not, you know, the rest of the year, because it's hard to make caddy changes for anybody right now.
That's what's peculiar about it to me. I would
the
think
timing,
they would,
yeah.
But they wanted to do it, you know,
on that 25th.
So they probably planned a lot of the movement around that date. And it just didn't happen because of Phil's, you know, graduation for his daughter.
Yeah, but it's a lot of speculation.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard
the
name.
I know. The media's going to be like that.
They're
going to create the truth.
Yeah, one of the golf writers is predicting Hideki Matsuyama.
Well, whatever.
You know, I've heard others say Rory could be, you know, in the market for a caddy because of, you know, his recent.
Right.
You don't want to say woes. He just won this past week, but he hasn't. You know, been where we expected him to be, you know, in the majors mm-hmm. and everything. So,
well, it's no surprise. We've got to talk about Tiger Woods. Statement released Sunday that Tiger Woods confirmed that he will not attend this week's tournament. Woods is receiving inpatient treatment for his problems with pain medication originally prescribed for his chronic back problems that have plagued him over the years. His current treatment was
precipitated.
Whew, I need a beer. By his arrest last week. Of course, the Quicken Loans at the TPC Potomac benefits the Tiger Woods Foundation for college access programs. So out goes Tiger again.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, obviously, and that had kind of been the rumor on tour that he was having some problems with the medication, you know. So, again, my only question is if he – you know, is able to kick this habit. I mean, how is he going to function daily in life if he can't take that medication, if he can't handle the being on the pain
pills?
Well,
that's why he's going to that treatment.
It's obvious that these surgeries haven't worked. I mean, that's pretty obvious, you know. So I don't know, man.
Yep.
But speaking of drugs and whatnot, the tour is going to have a new drug testing policy in which they're going to make a blood test. Part of the of it, they're going to match their policies to be in line with the World Anti-Doping Association. So they're going to now test for HGH, which is the human growth hormone, and they're going to announce suspensions for all substances next season, as opposed to the current system where only performance-enhancing drug suspensions are announced. So it sounds like a lot more stringent policy, and you know, I kind of have a feeling we might see, you know, unless there's plenty of advance warning now. You're talking about, you know, they're telling you, look, this is coming, but I have a feeling that there probably are some players that if Bernard Langer's not on HGH. I don't know who he is, okay? Because, I mean, this guy is an ageless wonder. You know, how can you be performing at that level at his age?
I think they need to check his putter first. Because
well, yeah, I guess so. Maybe so.
Yeah, well, we're going to wrap it up right now because we got another commercial break to clear. And, you know, want to say go Tigers.
Yep, absolutely. And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next Monday.
Hopefully. It's July 3rd.
I might be in Texas, though. I don't know. Yeah, okay.
All right. Well, if you do, you do, and you don't, you don't.
All right.
Have a good evening.
For over 30 years, Squirrel Run Golf Club has been New Iberia's premier golf community. Opened in 1986, Squirrel Run has become known as a location for golf where the whole family can enjoy. Each year, new golfers are tested by a challenging 18 holes of golf. Golf tournaments and outings at Squirrel Run are great ways to get together on the golf course. Memberships are available for those interested in joining Squirrel Run. Reserve your next tee time with Squirrel Run by contacting the Pro Shop at 337-367-0863. Squirrel Run, Darby Lane, New Iberia.
We have a new player on the field and he's ready for kickoff with a delicious ice-cold Coca-Cola. And the kick. Ice giving him a little trouble as a few cubes shake loose. He's probably going to pour it here, and he does. The glass is full. Can he go all the way? He did it! Oh, wow! And just listen to that fizz! That might have been the most refreshing thing that I've ever seen. Whew! Coca-Cola. Taste the feeling.
Sugar Oaks Golf Course, located at 4002 Sugar Oaks Road, is an 18-hole regulation golf course. This medium yardage layout has adequate length, wide fairways, and not too difficult approach shots. Sugar Oaks Golf Course is a semi-private course that's open to the public. Our guest rates are very attractive, and our monthly dues are accommodating. Give us a call for your tee time. That's Sugar Oaks Golf Course in New Iberia. Phone 337-364-7611. 364-7611.
In the shadows of the Tesh, Kane Radio, AM 1240.